Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy you're here with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And this hour, we discuss the papacy and its roots. Maybe even we could say the blueprint for the papacy in the Bible. The Bible blueprint for the papacy, our topic. If you have a call or question, a comment about that, give us a call, 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH if you prefer the spelling version of it. And a few things in contemporary Christianity are more controversial, I suppose, than the papacy and the role of the popes. It has, as a matter of fact, repeatedly been a source of division. But it's supposed to be the office of unity. And so maybe you're a Protestant who does not believe that the roots of the papacy are found in the Bible, that the blueprint is there in the Bible. Maybe you're a Catholic who doesn't know how to answer questions that a Protestant may challenge you with about the role of the papacy and the blueprint for the papacy in the Bible. That's what we are here to discuss this hour. Happy to help out if we can. 888-318-7884 is our number. And of course, the pride of Crawley, Louisiana is here with us, our very own apologist, Carlo Broussard.
Hello, Sha. How you doing?
Is that how you really talk?
No, that is not how I really talk.
Oh, I think you are what they call a code switcher. Do you know what code switching is?
No, I do not. Please inform me.
Code switching is like when you have a certain language and inflection that you use when you're at work or when you're in a certain location, and then when you're around your own people, it's different.
I guess I would have to fit that bill.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I must say, when I switch codes and not being around my folks in Cajun country in southern Louisiana, it is a bit more difficult. It's difficult to curb that accent, right? In order to appear sophisticated.
You do. One thing about you, Carlo, you appear sophisticated, I have to say. Do you think – oh, I see. Because when you speak the way you were raised in what do you call that country? Cajun country? Bayou?
Just southern Louisiana.
Yeah,
man.
Southern Louisiana. It's a very particular way
of
speaking.
Go Cajun Navy, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Cajun Navy's saving lives.
Amen, brother.
Probably even as we speak.
Yes.
Okay, so then did you have to practice, though?
Practice what?
Like to talk like a bland person?
I will let you in on a little secret, Sigh.
Yeah.
I do stand in the mirror and go, "Aoi."
Really?
Yeah, sometimes I have to. Growing up, there's certain words that we say in our accent to where I have to reform the way I enunciate and pronounce certain words. So for our listeners out there, I'll let you in on a little secret. I have to practice certain words.
Okay, so
see, I don't have our Cajun accent's cool, right? It's pretty cool. But then you have like Matt Frads with that Australian accent, right?
Yeah.
Where they sound so sophisticated. And then with the Cajun accent, it's fantastic. But see, the problem is sometimes when I say things, people don't understand what I'm saying because of the accent. It sort of...
Nope. That is not it. People don't understand what you're saying because they haven't read Plato and Thomas Aquinas and Augustine. That's why people don't understand.
And the reason why I bring this up is because recently the Insider Catholic Newsletter, they came out with an interview that Catholic Answers did with me, and it was pretty fun. I had got some good responses on Facebook from my Cajun friends in southern Louisiana because one of the questions for fun was, you know, you talk funny. You know, with that Cajun accent, do you think you'll be able to accomplish the goals that you set out to accomplish here at Catholic Answers? And so I responded in sort of the Cajun dialect.
Yeah.
May the good book says I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me.
Well,
now, granted, we don't all talk like that.
You don't all say tings?
We don't all say tings.
No, but it is. I don't know. I don't think that you have a full appreciation of how much other people like that accent.
Yes. See? No. It's very cool. People love it, man. They love to hear that Cajun accent, because to be Cajun is to be Catholic. To be Cajun is to be hospitable. To be Cajun is to be personable. Yeah. You know. So people enjoy that.
St. Peter talked with an accent. They could tell he was a Nazarene because of that funny accent.
Yep. They said he's from Galilee, all right.
Yeah. Right. From Galilee. Yeah.
And the folks listening can say, Carlo, he's from southern Louisiana, all right.
Right. That's right. So did Jesus really, and do we have evidence in the Bible for the idea that this Galilean with his heavy Galilean accent actually was chosen as what we would now identify as the Pope?
Despite the fact that he was an uneducated man and not the most sophisticated kind of guy, if I could use that term there, I like it. Yes, there is evidence, Cy, where Christ invests Peter with a certain authority to govern and to guide and to lead Jesus' church that he's starting, the people of God and the new covenant. It's basically what the church is, gathered around the Messiah Christ. And Jesus does invest such a royal authority to St. Peter to govern the kingdom of God on earth. And we find that primarily in Matthew 16, 18 through 19. All our listeners out there are probably familiar with that Bible passage where Jesus says, Simon, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. There in verse 19, whatever you bind and loose on earth is bound and loosed in heaven. And every Catholic pretty much knows, at least Catholics who are reading and studying their faith, they kind of know, hey, that's the Bible passage we need to go to show the Bible blueprint for the papacy, namely the role of the Pope, right, as a successor to St. Peter. But the key or the clues, and the key, right, that was an unintended pun there, the clues in that passage to suggest that Christ is investing Peter with a certain unique authority among the other apostles is, number one, Jesus changes his name to Rock and then promises to build his church upon Peter, the Rock. This is the very purpose for which he changed his name. Why change his name to Rock? Because he's the metaphorical rock that Christ, the builder, is going to build his church on. Now, our Protestant friends will object to that and say, well, no, Peter's not the rock. Jesus is the rock. Or Peter's not the rock. His confession of faith is the rock.
Oh,
and there are ways that we as Catholics can respond to that. I mean, it's clear that the metaphorical rock is referring immediately to Peter. Preceding that, you are Peter, his name Petros in Greek, which means rock. And on this rock, which refers to the antecedent, Peter, I will build my church. We know that Jesus is referring to Peter throughout the entire context. If you back up just a few verses, 15 through 19, you know, he asked the question, who do people say that I am? Peter responds, after everyone gets the answer wrong, right? Who do people say that I am? Well, they're saying this, that, and the other. Who do you say that I am? Peter responds, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then Jesus begins directing his message to Peter. I say to you, right? Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven, which is a key there, because Peter has received a divine revelation apart from the other apostles. And then Jesus continues speaking to Simon. Simon, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. I give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loose in heaven. So the whole context is directed toward Peter. It doesn't make sense that in the midst of all of that, Jesus would say, you, but I'm going to build a church upon me, and then you, right, type of thing.
Right.
So the whole context is directed toward Peter. So if Peter is this metaphorical rock upon which Christ is going to build his church, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this throughout the broadcast, then Peter is this visible foundation of the visible church on earth. Yes, Jesus is the true rock and the foundation, but Jesus here is grafting Peter into himself, you might say, where Peter can participate in the rockness of Jesus, that Jesus is appointing Peter to be the visible foundation on earth for the church, a visible source of unity. Because wherever the foundation is, there is the true church on which wherever the foundation of the church is, there's the true church of Christ, because you can't separate the foundation from the structure that is built on the foundation, right? So wherever the foundation is, there's the true church of Jesus Christ, and that foundation is Peter. This is why the church in her tradition says that the papacy, the successors to Peter as the Bishop of Rome, is the ecumenical center of the church, the visible source of unity, because I can know where the true church of Jesus is because I know Jesus gave us a visible foundation. So wherever the foundation is, there's the structure that Jesus is building on that foundation. There's the true church. And then finally, secondly, the major clue in that text is that Jesus gives Peter the keys of the kingdom of heaven, which when we go through a biblical exegesis of that and look at it in light of the Old Testament, particularly Isaiah 22, 15 through 22, that imagery of the keys of the kingdom is an allusion to a particular office, a royal office in the Davidic kingdom, namely the master of the palace or the royal steward, who was given a key to symbolize the royal authority. It was a position of authority that was succeeded, that implied succession. One man was succeeded by another, and if you read about it in Isaiah 22, you read about this wicked prime minister or royal steward, Shebna, who's deposed and replaced by Eliakim, and there's certain language of authority being directed toward Eliakim. He receives a robe which suggests royal authority. He receives the key of the house of David, and whatever he shuts, none shall open. Whatever he opens, none shall shut. And scholars point out that it's against that Old Testament backdrop that Jesus, the heir to the throne, the son of David, the true king, who has the key of the house of David, according to Revelation 3:7, is giving to Peter those dynastic royal keys, you might say, the keys of the universal kingdom. So the governance is not just of a localized kingdom of a particular nation, but it's a universal kingdom. Hence, you might say the plurality of the keys, right? Investing to Peter, thus making Peter for the universal kingdom of Jesus what Shebna and Eliakim were for the Davidic kingdom of old, right? So Peter thus has this royal authority delegated to him by Jesus the King to govern the kingdom of God on earth, namely the church, to bind and loose, which parallels the language of the Old Testament, opening and shutting, which signifies certain juridical authority, authority of disciplinary laws permitting one to enter the kingdom, excluding one from the kingdom, as well as doctrinal interpretation, authority to interpret doctrine. This is language that was familiar of the rabbis within the Jewish tradition at current at the time and subsequent to that time. So we see these elements present in Matthew chapter 16 that when we look at that, we're able to make the conclusion, well, man, Jesus is not only making Peter the visible foundation as a visible source of unity, but investing him with a certain royal authority in the universal kingdom of Jesus, namely the church, to exercise on behalf of Jesus.
Yeah.
Which, what's the implications of that? Si, you and me as citizens of the kingdom, we need to look to this royal steward to guide and to lead us ultimately in the truth that Jesus has revealed to us.
The Bible Blueprint for the Papacy is our topic this hour with Carlo Broussard, our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. We welcome any questions from any angle. If you are a Protestant brother or sister and would like to dispute it with us, we're open to dispute as well. We'll try to do so in the most respectful way we can. 888-318-7884. Carlo, I have a quick question I want to ask you, and then I'm going to go to calls when we come back from the break. And that question has to do with, okay, even if I agree with you that Jesus gave this to Peter, does that mean that Jesus created a permanent office for to continue through the ages? We'll be right back with that and Carlo Broussard right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Don't you just love listening to Carlo Broussard? Did you know you can book Carlo or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. And at $3 a copy when purchased in bulk, it's perfect for parish distribution and any of your adult faith formation needs. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism, the belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly, Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Carlo Broussard, our guests. We're talking about the Pope, the Bible blueprint for the papacy. Carlo, you explained to us before we went to the break. You know what? Let me give out the number again, because I do want, especially our Protestant brothers and sisters, if they're just catching us, to give us a call, 888-318-7884, the number 888-31-TRUTH. So you explained to us how clear the Bible makes it that Peter's role is unique, that Jesus gives him that unique role, gives him those keys, makes him essentially the steward of the kingdom.
Right.
But how do we know that that's an office that he intended to persist and not just a personal thing for Peter for a time?
Yeah, well, I think one line of reasoning we can employ would just be from common sense. I mean, if Jesus is establishing not only a universal kingdom in the sense that it's going to be universal geographically, but also universal in the sense of temporally.
Yeah.
Jesus intends for his kingdom, namely the church, to exist for all generations, world without end, until the end of the age, right? So it would seem reasonable, at least it's reasonable, that Jesus would intend that this ministry of being the keeper of the palace, right, this royal steward, steward would continue within the kingdom that exists throughout all generations, world without end. So, and secondly, I would say that there is no biblical evidence to suggest that the paradigm shifted. So if this is the paradigm that Jesus sets out, he's constituting his church with a specific ministry in it, namely the ministry of the royal steward possessed by Peter, then that's the paradigm. Well, then there's no evidence that the paradigm shifts. There's no evidence that would suggest that this ministry ceased to exist
right
with the death of the last apostle. So with the death of Peter, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a second line of reasoning. And then finally, a third answer that I would provide or suggest to that question or objection would be looking at Peter's role in light of the ministry of the royal steward or the office of the royal steward in the Old Testament. Because the royal steward, the master of the palace in the Old Testament, the Davidic kingdom, was a permanent office that was succeeded by other men. In particular, we see in Isaiah chapter 22 that Shebna was succeeded by Eliakim. And then we also have some evidence elsewhere throughout sacred scripture where you have other masters of the palace, other royal stewards. So, for example, Ahishar was the first royal steward, recorded in 1 Kings 4:6. Arza, during the reign of King Elah was the successor to Ahishar. In 1 Kings 16:9, we read about him. Obadiah was the royal steward, the master of the palace during the reign of King Ahab in 1 Kings 18:3. And then when you get to Isaiah 22, you read about Shebna being succeeded by Eliakim. So it's obvious in the Old Testament that that office of the kingdom was permanent. It implied succession. So if Peter is the royal steward of the New Testament restored and transfigured Davidic kingdom, namely the Church of Jesus Christ, well then, in light of that Old Testament backdrop, it would be reasonable to conclude that if Jesus is intending Peter to be the royal steward of his kingdom, well then he would also be intending for that ministry to be permanent and be succeeded by other men. That there would be other bishops who would be the Bishop of Rome, which is the bishopric that Peter, you know, that Peter died in as Bishop of Rome, that those other men who would succeed Peter as the Bishop of Rome would continue to be the keeper of the keys and continue this Petrine ministry of governing the flock of God, right? The kingdom of God, namely the church, guiding it and leading it in that ministry, binding, loosing, etc.
888-318-7884, the number. The Bible Blueprint for the Papacy is our topic. Ready to go to calls, Carlo?
Yeah, let's do it.
William in Hillsboro, New Jersey, listening on the Catholic Answers app. William, your question for Carlo.
Hi, Carlo.
Hi, William.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, brother.
So I need some help here.
Okay.
So my brother, he's an evangelical pastor, and we go at it once in a while.
Sure.
So we've been talking about Peter and the authority he was given on Matthew 16.
Right.
So I finally got him to agree that Jesus actually gave Peter authority over the church. But now he came back and said that Paul also was given authority. And so what he's trying to say is that Peter had authority, but Paul had authority as well. So that means that there could be multiple groups following the same faith. It doesn't have to be through the Catholic Church. Okay. And basically what he was saying, the identity of the church comes from the presence of Jesus, and he delegates his authority to, I guess, whoever he wants to. Right. And he quoted 1 Peter 5:1-5 for that. So I was wondering, you know, what's a good way to respond to it?
Well, first of all, we could acknowledge that Jesus does give Paul authority, as well as the other apostles. He does give them authority. I mean, we read in Matthew 18:15-17, when Jesus is speaking to all the apostles, that they have the authority to bind and loose. But here's where the rubber meets the road, William, and that is to ask the question, well, okay, all these guys have some role in leadership. They have some authority. But the question is there a focal point of that authority? Is there a centralized authority where even this group of leaders, of official leaders in Jesus' church, can be unified in the authority that they're going to exercise? So that's the question. Is there a centralized authority among the official leaders of Jesus' church who all possess authority as well? And we as Catholics would say, yes, getting back to Matthew chapter 16, where Jesus exclusively singles Peter out, telling him that he is the metaphorical rock upon which he's going to build his church. He never says that to Paul or any other apostle. Secondly, Jesus singles Peter out in giving him the keys of the kingdom. He doesn't say that to any of the other apostles, including Paul. And thirdly, Jesus singles Peter out in binding and loosing. Yes, he gives all the apostles that authority in Matthew 18, but in Matthew 16, he's singling Peter out, which would seem to suggest that Peter has a unique role in binding and loosing apart from the other apostles. And then finally, William, I would look to the Council of Jerusalem in Acts chapter 15 in order to show that Peter has a superior authority even over the Apostle Paul. If you notice at the beginning of Acts chapter 15, Luke, William, is describing the situation of the Judaizer heresy, right, where there were some of the Jews who were saying that in order to be a true Christian, you have to still hold fast to the Mosaic laws of the Old Testament, the ceremonial precepts, including circumcision. So in order to be saved, you got to be a Jew first. You got to get circumcised, then believe in Jesus Christ in order to be saved. Now, at the beginning of Acts, Luke tells us that Paul and Barnabas couldn't settle the debate. They had to take the issue up to Jerusalem. And in Acts 15:6, we read there was no small dissension. In other words, there was a lot of debate going on. And then in verse 7 and the verses following, Peter stands up and declares the truth of the matter and declares that you don't have to be circumcised and hold fast to the Mosaic ceremonial precepts of the Old Covenant in order to be saved, but you're saved by grace through faith. And in verse 12 of Acts 15, the multitude fell silent. James stands up. He makes a pastoral proposal. And then so we see that Peter actually exercises that unique authority over and above the other apostles. Maybe we can put a pretty bow on the other side.
Hang on, William. Carlos said, we'll continue this on the other side. The Bible Blueprint for the Papacy, our topic this hour. 888-31-TRUTH, our number. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live after this.
Glad you're with us. Join us on air with your questions today on Catholic Answers Live.
It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism, the belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly, Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Atheists have a new tactic when it comes to talking about the existence of God. Your arguments in favor of God don't even deserve a reply, they say. Because not only does God not exist, he doesn't even matter. In his new DVD, Why God Still Matters, apologist Carlo Broussard doesn't let them off so easy. He takes apart the premises of those who say God's irrelevant and teaches you what you need to demonstrate why God is just as important. In fact, in today's world, more important than ever. Don't let atheists shut down the argument before it begins. Get your copy of Why God Still Matters by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Now is the time to make your plans for the 2017 EWTN Family Celebration, September 9th and 10th are the dates. And Worcester, Massachusetts is the place for our celebration of 100 years of Fatima. This is your chance to meet your favorite Catholic TV and radio hosts. Kids can have a fun-spirational time at EWTN's Faith Factory. And best of all, it's free. For more information, go to EWTN.com/Family Celebration.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett, your host here with you, and with Carlo Broussard, our guest. Carlo, an apologist, speaker extraordinaire, author, CD maker. Not a DVD maker, though.
Yes.
Dang. DVD
maker. Why God Still Matters.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. It's just I usually call your CD, Your Truth, My Truth, a DVD.
Right.
So I can't get it right. One way, it doesn't matter what I do, Carlo. I can't get it right. We were talking with William in Hillsboro, New Jersey, before the break about his brother's claim that Peter and Paul are both given authority. Therefore, there can be lots of churches and all that. William, you still with us?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
fantastic. Okay, so William, we're going to have to. I want to try to tie a little bow on this, and then we're going to probably have to move on. But I'll get your quick thoughts after I finish here, real quick. So before the break, I was referencing you to Acts chapter 15, where Peter clearly shows that he exercises a unique and supreme authority in a way that you can't walk away from that passage and conclude that he is one among equals, right? He clearly exercises an authority over and above the other apostles and presbyters gathered there, including Paul himself and even James, because James merely presents a pastoral proposal and the whole congregation, the whole group of apostles and presbyters has to decide on the matter of James's proposal. But that is not the case when Peter declares the truth about how a man is to be saved. Now, William, just very briefly, you had mentioned before the break that, you know, your brother presents 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1, if I remember correctly. Is that correct? As an objection to Peter's rule? Okay. Yeah, so for our listener's sake, William, 1 Peter 5, 1, St. Peter refers to himself in the Greek as a presbyteros, as a fellow elder, because he's addressing fellow elders, right? And so the claim is that this undermines Peter's unique role because he's just one among many, right? One among equals. But the problem with that objection is, how do we respond? Well, first of all, the whole context, if you read 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5, it's all about humility. He says, clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another. And this would be no different than a president addressing the Americans by saying, my fellow Americans, or Pope St. John Paul II in his encyclicals and apostolic exhortations, etc. He would say, or if he's writing specifically to bishops, he would say, my venerable brothers in the episcopate, right? So there's just that sense of solidarity. In no way does the fact that St. Peter refers to himself as an elder or a presbyter undermines his unique role any more than Paul, who refers to himself as a deacon in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 5, undermines his authority as an apostle. So that's what I would leave you with, William.
Thank you very much. I mean, you guys are awesome. I was listening to you guys, so thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother.
Thank you very much, William. Raymond in Alameda, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Your question for Carlo Broussard.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good, all Raymond. Right.
I am just happy to have this opportunity to talk to you guys. I have so much to say. You all are saying some wonderful things and talking about some great things. But I worry that we today with technology are very similar to the Book of Judges, where everybody's doing what's right in their own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that there are many or various religious institutions that claim that exact passage, Matthew 16 and 18, for validation for their existence. And my question is about how do we determine whose interpretation is the correct interpretation, because those institutions interpret that passage to mean that the rock was the statement that Jesus Christ was Lord, Son of God. And then the second question, I'm sorry for being so verbose, but the second question is, you know, is there a known lineage, or how do we directly connect the Catholic Church to that time period when we have the Catholic Church being noted as started in 500 or 600 AD? How do we connect that time period?
Okay, well, I think that would be the first problem, that the Catholic Church was not started in 500 or 600 AD, that the Catholic Church historically was started by Jesus himself. So the in order to build the historical bridge to St. Peter, Raymond, is that we know from history, from the writings of the first, from the early Christians right after the Apostolic Age, that we know Peter went to Rome and that Peter died as the Bishop of Rome. We have citations from St. Irenaeus, who writes about AD 180 or so. We have citations from St. Cyprian of Carthage. We have citations from the church, early church historian Eusebius, who writes in the early to mid 4th century AD, where the early Christians recount how Peter possessed the bishopric of Rome. It was his see that he, even according in Paul's writings, when Paul writes to the Romans, the citation is slipping my mind, it might be Romans 15, but I'll look it up in a minute here, that he seems to indicate that a foundation has already been laid there in Rome, that somebody has already established the church in Rome. And when you look at the historical evidence, it's reasonable to conclude that that was Peter, and that Peter died as the bishop of Rome. And consequently, we know from the historical writings of the early Christians that there were men who succeeded Peter as the bishop of Rome. St. Irenaeus in AD 180, in his work Against Heresies, lists the 12 bishops of Rome that succeeded from Peter to his day. In various other writings in the early Christians, you find a succession to Peter's bishopric, right, in Rome. And the Catholic Church is the only Christian community today that has that historical succession to Peter as the Bishop of Rome. And consequently, the Catholic Church is the original Christian franchise, that original group that Jesus Christ established. So that's how we make the historical connection from the church today to Matthew 16 and the authority that Jesus gave St. Peter. Now, Raymond, my memory is slipping me here. What was your first question prior to the historical continuity question? It's slipping my memory here.
I sincerely appreciate that response. So great, but I got to get into my books again. But then the initial question was about the statement that upon this rock
okay.
I will build my church.
Okay.
Oftentimes it's interpreted as the rock was the statement that Jesus Christ is the Lord. And
oh,
that's
I see.
What
yeah.
the church is built on.
Okay, so the question is Jesus the rock that the church is built on, or is the profession of Peter the rock that the church is built on?
The confession
the confession of
Peter
faith
made.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing, Raymond, really quick. As Catholics, we acknowledge, according to paragraph 424 in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, we acknowledge that in a secondary sense, the profession of Peter's faith is a foundation of the church. But that's in a secondary mode. That's a sort of a polyvalent meaning. When you look at the context of the passage, it's, as I was suggesting earlier, when you analyze it, it's clear that Jesus is referring to Peter, the person, as the metaphorical rock. I mean, that's why he changes Simon's name to Petros in Greek, which we know it was in Aramaic, Cephas, according to John 1:42, which means rock. So why would Jesus change Simon's name to rock if he's not the metaphorical rock upon which Christ is building his church? So we would say, as Catholics, that on a first level meaning within the immediate context of Matthew 16, 18 through 19, that Peter is the rock. But in a secondary sense, the confession of Peter is also a rock. And whenever we're talking about metaphors, Raymond, we got to understand that metaphors can be used in different ways. So just because Peter's profession can be seen as the metaphorical rock upon which Christ is building his church, it doesn't follow from that Peter himself is not the metaphorical rock as well upon which Christ is building his church. And finally, I would just suggest to you, Raymond, that even Protestant scholars recognize this aspect, that Peter himself is the metaphorical rock and not necessarily or only his profession of faith. Oscar Coleman, W.F. Albright, and others. And if you want to get a hold of a great resource, the title is Upon This Rock by Stephen Ray, where he quotes many of these Protestant scholars who actually line up with the Catholic interpretation of this passage. So that's what I would leave you with, Raymond. What do you think of that?
Thank you so much. I feel so warm. It's a long time since I've had a true question and had it answered fully. So I appreciate it.
Praise be Jesus, man.
That's it. Can we just close the show now? Because that was so nice, Raymond. That was such a nice conversation to have with you. Thank you so much for that call, Raymond. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to ask you, we're mostly talking about this, Carlo, from a Protestant and Catholic perspective. A viewer on Facebook has written a question about, but what about the Orthodox perspective? So can we tackle that when we come back?
Yeah, let's
All right, more with Carlo Broussard on, I don't know why I'm having trouble with your name today, Carlo. More with the pride of Crawley, Louisiana, right after this, or the Bible blueprint for the papacy. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live. Come on, Cyril.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
Are you coming to the Catholic Answers Conference this September?
You guys put on a great show, so it's well worth coming.
Very powerful, very motivational and moving.
I think it's awesome. It's been really amazing to get to know people from all across the country.
Every time somebody's speaker finishes, I feel like I want to cry just because of how happy I am.
It's been pretty phenomenal. Very educational, enlightening.
This year's conference is September 28th through the 30th here in beautiful San Diego, and we want to see you there. Seats are still available, but act now because they are going fast. Call us today at 1-888-291-8000 or visit CatholicAnswersConference.com now and reserve your spot.
This is where it starts, and it definitely has started for me.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clear witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online School of Evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 4:38, we read that after Jesus left the synagogue, he entered the house of Simon, whose mother-in-law was afflicted with a severe fever. They interceded with him about her. He then rebuked the fever, and it left her. Now, certainly Jesus could have healed her when he first saw her difficulty. But by having the others intercede for her, they were able to show her love as well. As members of his body, we are members of each other. The whole matter of interceding for each other is the way he designed us to act. So, what is the difference between the household interceding with Jesus about Simon's mother-in-law and the saints in heaven interceding for us now? Basically, nothing. The saints intercede for us, and we intercede for one another for the very same reason. It's all a matter of love. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
You should talk about this stuff at the conference, Carlo. You should talk about the papacy at the big conference we're having, because this is the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, the beginning of the Reformation. And this is the whole thing is called the Reunification of All Christians. That's the name of the conference, right? September 28th through 30th, right here in San Diego. You should come there and you should speak about the papacy.
You think?
I think so.
I think that's a great idea. I might have to do that, Si.
Well, you know, how would people come and see that, the spectacle? The wonder of Carlo speaking about the papacy. You would go to – would they go to CatholicAnswersConference.com and sign up?
I think so. And in fact, I just found this out today that you can – if you can't sign up and be there in person and feel the energy present at the conference and you have to stay home, right? Well, you can actually watch it online, because all the talks, from what I've been informed today, are going to be streamed.
Oh, man. I have to put a tie on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good.
You have to dress up to sign.
Really? Because I was coming in my...
Make yourself pretty, man.
Oh, well, that ain't going to be easy. How many weeks have I got to prepare?
That's what I heard today in the office. So I don't know if I was supposed to announce that on radio
or not. Well, you just did. And it's very good news. You could send us an email at conference@catholic.com if you want more information, conference@catholic.com. But I do have to mention this deal is still on. If you get five other people and recruit them, you get the sixth ticket free.
Oh, sweet.
And everybody gets the early bird rate that we haven't been. 2 months ago we stopped giving out the early bird rate.
That's cool.
So everybody gets, if you get, you have to get six tickets together though.
888-318-7884, our number. Come on, come to the conference. We'd love to see you there September 28th through 30th at the Hyatt Regency here in La Jolla.
Yeah, and I'll be talking about this topic as well, the papacy. The title of my talk is The Keys to Christian Unity. So I'll be talking about how the papacy is that ecumenical center of the church, the visible source of unity, and looking at practical keys that the popes have used in recent past to not only, you know, the Pope is not only the principle and foundation of the unity, the visible unity here on earth, but the Pope has a job to work to bring about unity.
Yeah.
And so the question is, what are some of the practical keys that the popes of recent past have used in order to fulfill their role as the shepherd of Jesus' flock, to keep the flock united and to bring others into the fold? So that's what I'll be talking
about. Very cool. Yeah. Very, very cool. Well, I told you we had a question, Joe, on Facebook. And thanks for watching on Facebook, Joe. Thanks for everybody who joins us via the internet. You have to speak about this in terms of the Orthodox, Carlo,
right,
because none, I'm giving you the capitalized parts, because none of them believe this. They feel that the keys were given to the church and all our successors of Peter. I know. They feel that while the Pope had a primacy of honor, that's
right,
it. No authority. Please clarify this matter.
Yeah, so it's a matter of primacy of honor versus a primacy, a supremacy, right? A primacy of honor versus a supremacy. And I think fundamentally, Si, it just all goes back to how we look at the crucial text of Matthew 16, 18 through 19, and other texts as well. I mean, in response to all the apostles having the keys of the kingdom, there is a sense in which that's true. All the apostles, as I mentioned earlier in Matthew 18, verse 18, have the authority to bind and loose, which presupposes exercising the keys of the kingdom. But they have that authority only in as much as they are united to the one to whom was given the keys of the kingdom singly, uniquely, in an exclusive way, namely Peter himself. And we kind of get a hint of this in another Bible passage, in Luke 22, at the Last Supper. I think it's right around verses 29 through 32, if I'm not mistaken, where Jesus says that Satan desires to sift all of the apostles and sift them like wheat. But Jesus makes a specific prayer of protection, and he says, I pray for you, in reference to Peter, that your faith may not fail. And once you have recovered from your fall, strengthen the brethren, right? The point being is that Jesus makes an exclusive promise to protect Peter in faith, which means that if you don't want to be sifted by Satan, you need to be hanging with Peter. So that's an indication that Peter is this visible source of unity in the truth. And once you step out of that protection, then you make yourself vulnerable to being sifted by Satan, to being sifted like wheat. So we see that Peter has this supreme role of being the visible source of unity. He is the focal point. He is the centralized authority. And then, of course, he alone receives the exclusive command to feed the sheep, you know, feed the lambs, tend the sheep, as Jesus says in John 21, 15 through 17, you know, do you love me? Yes, Lord. Okay. Feed the sheep. Do you love me? Yes, Lord. Shepherd the sheep, right? Do you love me? Yes. Feed the lambs, etc. And only Peter receives this triple command to shepherd Christ's flock, which indicates that he has a unique role in this shepherding. All the apostles are shepherds. All those who succeed the apostles, namely the bishops, are shepherds. We see this in Scripture. They have a shepherding role, but only in as much as they are in union with the first shepherd that Christ sets forth on this earth for his flock, namely Peter. So yes, the other apostles have authority. Yes, Peter is a bishop along with the other bishops. But in Scripture, Peter receives this unique role from Jesus Christ as the shepherd of the universal church.
888-318-7884, our number. Joe, thanks very much for that question on Facebook. We go now to Joel in Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on 89.1 FM. Joel, your question for Carlo.
Well, good evening. sorry.
No, it's all right. We're happy to have you, Joel. I think it's more evening for you than for us. I just looked out the window, and it's still afternoon here. But it is evening in Indianapolis, I assume.
Yes, it's actually past 7:45. So yes, getting on there.
How can we help you, my friend?
Enjoy listening to your show. I only catch it periodically as I'm a long haul trucker. Let's see the reference to Peter as the stone. You said the word was Petra, I believe.
Well, Simon's new name in Greek is Petros. And then the metaphorical rock, and upon this rock in Greek, it's Petra. So what is your question concerning that?
That was actually part of the question. There is a difference between the two. So you're saying that essentially it was if not a play on words, that he was still referencing Peter as the rock because he referred to him as a rock
right
earlier in the sentence?
Yes. So is your question, Joe, because there's a difference in Greek words, does it follow from that Peter is not the metaphorical rock?
That was essentially the point that I was bringing.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks for the question, Joel. Yeah, this is, Cy, this is a question that many of our Protestant brothers and sisters will ask. And it is true in the Greek text, Simon, you are Petros, you are Peter, right? And upon this Petra in Greek, upon this rock, I will build my church. And so the claim is, because there's two different Greek words, Peter is not the metaphorical rock. Now, here's a few answers, in fact, Joe. Many scholars point out, even Protestant scholars such as D.A. Carson and Craig Keener, point out that there is no difference in meaning in Koine Greek. In classical Greek, within Greek poetry, etc., in ancient Greek, you know, the 8th to the 4th century B.C., you can find, these scholars point out that you can find some references of a slight difference in meaning between the two words. But in Koine Greek, these scholars point out that there is no difference in meaning.
Koine
Greek being the Greek of the New Testament.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay.
But here's what helped me, Joe. There's no difference in Aramaic. Scholars point out that it's likely that Jesus would have said this in Aramaic, being that's the language he spoke. We know, in fact, that Jesus willed to change Simon's name to rock in Aramaic, according to John 1:42, because John preserves the Aramaic word when Jesus says, Simon, you shall be called Cephas. So we know for sure that Jesus intends Simon's new name to be rock, in light of the Aramaic in John 1:42. So when we come back to Matthew 16, many scholars, once again, D.A. Carson, Oscar Coleman, Protestant scholars pointing out that it's likely that when Jesus said this in Aramaic, there's no difference in words. It would have been, Simon, you are Cephas or Kepha, and upon this Kepha, I will build my church. So no difference in the Aramaic, because they both mean rock. So the question that comes up, Joel, is why the difference in the Greek? And as many scholars point out, once again, Protestant scholars as well, the difference is in gender. Because in Greek, you have different gender nouns, right? And Petra, which refers to the metaphorical rock, is feminine. And because you can't use a feminine noun for a masculine, a male's name, so you have the masculine noun, Petros. So the difference is there, but it doesn't follow from that they differ in meaning, because we know Simon's new name in Aramaic means rock. So the difference, the explanation for the difference, is the difference in the gender. Petros being masculine, which is Simon's name. Petra being feminine, which refers to the metaphorical rock upon which Christ is building his church. It would be kind of like the reason why, you know, Stephen Ray points this out in his book, Upon His Rock. That's why, he was a man. He was a male, right? That's why his mom named him Stephen instead of Stephanie.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to use a feminine noun as a proper name for a man. So these are some of the ways in which scholars explain and articulate the difference between these two words. But in no way does it undermine the Catholic belief and interpretation that Peter is this metaphorical rock upon which Christ is building his church.
Does that work for you?
It does. I should probably had pointed out at the beginning that I am technically a Protestant. So,
well, thank you for calling, Joe. We appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, I don't want to appear deceitful, but not.
No problem.
You didn't
come across that way at all. Not at all,
Joel. We're happy to take that call. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's very, very welcome, Peter. Joel. Thank you for that. I've got Peter on the brain now. I want to ask you something though. When you talk about the Bible blueprint for the papacy, it also tells us something about how the papacy works, the way that Peter lives, right? That it's not just that the papacy exists, but also the way that he confirms the brothers in the faith, he settles issues, but he's not a dictator or something like that. He's part of the community.
That's right. As Jesus also says in Luke 22, prior to making that exclusive promise of protection from the sifting of Satan, before that, Jesus introduces the mode of leadership, namely not to be served, but to serve.
Amen.
The role of the papacy is service in unity.
Well, thank you for your service today, Carlo.
You're welcome,
As
Scott.
Always, I enjoyed the time with you. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. That means any question you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church. If you have a question that wasn't answered today, well, we can try again tomorrow. And we'll get you on there. 2 hours of open forum. Thanks so much for listening. God willing, we'll see you again tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.